Chapter 26. A flock of black storks were flapping lazily overhead as Greg walked up the Miriam's gangplank. The bodyguard teleported out of nowhere to block his path, a hand holding both railings. He was wearing a red and green striped rugby shirt and coffee-coloured shorts.
"You looking for something?"
he asked in strongly accented English.
"Yes, Mr. Di Girolamo. He's not expecting you."
Greg couldn't see the bodyguard's eyes. They were hidden behind wraparound Ferranti sunglasses. His neck was thickly muscled, displaying a vast network of protruding veins. Whatever steroids he was taking, they were playing hell with his blood pressure.
"Just tell him Greg Mandel is here to see him."
He held up the Event Horizon card. The bodyguard thought it over, then called over his shoulder. Another bodyguard appeared at the top of the gangplank, a black bear of a man, over 2 meters tall, shoulders in proportion, sweat glinting on his broad forehead. The two of them exchanged a brief murmur, then the first stabbed a meaty forefinger at Greg.
"You, don't move."
He disappeared below deck, leaving his replacement to fold his arms and look Greg up and down contemptuously. Greg ignored the attempted intimidation. If Kendrick was relying on people like this to protect him from a professional snatch posse, then he was in deep trouble. They looked tough, and probably knew their combat routine, but put them up against a Tech Merc hardliner team, and they wouldn't last the opening second. Muddy water lapped quietly against the yacht's hull. Greg had deliberately waited until midday to give Kendrick a chance to recover from his partying at the Blue Ball.
"You've cracked,"
Susie had barked when he told her he was going on board.
"Tell you, I have to get near Kendrick," he said.
"Why, for Christ's sake?"
"Ask him questions. See how he reacts."
"Crazy."
She crossed herself, eyes rolling. But she helped organize the backup, positioning the Trinities around the marina. Greg couldn't find any fault in her method. Susie had been one who listened. Knowing the squad was providing covering fire gave him a degree of confidence walking into the lion's den. The orders Susie had were simple enough. On no account was he to be taken into the yacht itself.
"Okay, you can come up."
The first bodyguard had returned. The set of his jaw radiated severe disapproval. Miriam was 65 meters of sheer beauty. Whatever his other faults, Kendrick certainly knew the difference between refined style and pretentious glitz. Miriam was conceived as a shrine to the former. Her polished wooden decks gleamed with a rosy sheen under the desert bright sun. Every immaculate brass fixture was mirror bright. The low-friction white paint was painful on the eyes. Greg was led round to the afterdeck. It had integral couches with puffy leather upholstery, forming an island in the center. Several recliners dotted about. There was a clutch of chrome gym equipment on the starboard side, just outside the lounge cabin doors. Katerina was lying prone on the bench press, using its leg lift, a big LCD counter notching up each pull. She was dressed in tight black neoprene sprinter shorts, green stretch leggings, and the top of a loose mauve T-shirt that had been slashed in half, its ragged hem barely covering her large breasts. Her mane of blonde hair was held back with a broad white elastic toweling band. She was perspiring heavily, drawing breath through her nostrils, an expression of grim concentration on her perfect chiseled features.
"I do know you,"
she said through clenched teeth. The weight she was lifting was almost as much as he used in his own regimen.
"You were at Julie's house."
"That's me," Greg said. "Nice party, wasn't it?"
"You can go now, Mark. Kendrick will be out in a minute."
The bodyguard looked like he wanted to protest, but didn't quite know how. Greg flashed him a sunny smile, receiving a dark scowl for his trouble. Despite the Ferranti glasses, Greg could tell the man's eyes were on Katerina as he shuffled off forward. It was understandable, given the circumstances. His own gaze kept switching between her fantastic legs and her abdomen, hypnotized by the hard cords of muscle flexing below her smooth, tanned skin. Ever hopeful her little scrap of T-shirt would ride up just that fraction higher.
97, 98, 99, finish,
she gasped.
Is it worth it?
Her head dropped back to rest on the bench's thin padding.
Kendrick likes me to be fit,
she said. Her voice was high, childlike and remote.
He says that anyone blessed with a body as good as mine has a duty to keep it in tip-top shape. He wouldn't enjoy me so much otherwise.
And what Kendrick says and enjoys is important, is it?
Her eyes closed,
Yes, very. They do things to me, you see. Such wonderful things. If I can't please them in turn, they might stop. I couldn't stand that.
The passive sing-song lilt she used to recite her doctrine gave him a chill. He folded his espersense around her. Katerina's mind was strange. Unruffled, as though she'd been popping tranquilizers. There was little mental activity. She was taking only the minimum notice of her surroundings. It was almost a hibernatory state. But there was no sign of any post-trauma withdrawal, nor any of the jagged rents of chemical-induced damage he had been expecting. Greg went deeper. Beneath the sluggish currents of her surface thoughts, there was a treasured core of memory, a glowing center of delicious anticipation and joy. But for all its bright glory, it was a contaminant, tainting every thought.
"What wonderful things?" he asked softly.
Katerina's face became dreamy.
"They love me," she said.
"How do they love you?"
"Sometimes gently. Sometimes so fiercely they make me cry. It doesn't matter which. It always ends wonderfully."
Greg felt his skin going slick with cold sweat.
"How long has this been going on, Katerina?"
"Ever since I came here. Time doesn't really bother me now. I'm too happy. Adrian tried, of course. Tried so hard. But it never came with him, not properly. I'm so lucky they took me away from him. I might never have known otherwise."
"When did they take you away?"
She looked out vacantly across the marina, her mind nearly losing the thread of thought.
"At the party? Uncle Horace's party? Bill Yee was there. That's what Julie promised. So I went. Only they were there, too. He was funny and kind. It was exciting."
She turned back to look at Greg, an angel's face vandalized by tears.
"He's so strong, and I'm afraid."
Kendrick de Girolamo slid open the cabin lounge door and stepped onto the aft deck. Hermione followed a pace behind.
"Mr. Mandel!"
He took Greg's hand in a limp grip.
"So nice of you to call. I trust Katerina has been entertaining you satisfactorily."
He was wearing a navy blue blazer with bright brass buttons, and a spotted silk handkerchief peeping out of his breast pocket, a dark green cravat filling the top of his open white shirt. White flannel trousers and dark blue sneakers complemented the nautical image. Hermione bestowed a gracious smile. A musky breath of orchid perfume stole around Greg, caressing, starting off that certain tingle. The weeks hadn't dimmed the memory of her beauty. Skin deep, he warned himself. Camouflage. She was dressed in a cerise off-the-shoulder gypsy top and blue knee-length skirt. He was reminded of a bird of prey waiting to pounce, mesmerically deadly. Katerina rose from the padded bench, bare feet slapping on the wooden deck as she came to stand close beside Kendrick.
"I've done my routine,"
she said, looking up adoringly at his face.
"All of it. Everything you said."
Greg turned away from her desperate search for Kendrick's approval, studying the new Eastfield skyline. Kendrick gently wiped her tears with his forefinger, an act which resulted in an almost electric jolt firing through Katerina's mind. His touch was awakening her, an incredibly warped version of Sleeping Beauty and Prince Charming.
"Well done, my dear. I shall attend you in a little while. I have to have a few words with this gentleman first."
The desolation on her face was heart-wrenching.
"Come along, darling," Hermione said. "It's just silly man's talk. We'll go and get you ready. You're all smelly after that exercise. A nice shower is just what you need."
She took Katerina's hand and led her back into the cabin. Katerina looked back at Kendrick, eyes round, imploring.
"Hurry."
Kendrick blew her a kiss. The door closed. Through the blackened glass, Greg could just make out Katerina pulling off her mauve T-shirt. Hermione's arm slipped possessively round the girl's narrow waist, leading her deeper into the Miriam.
"Such an exquisite young girl," Kendrick said,
watching Greg's face with narrowed eyes.
"I have always admired your English roses. After one has broken through that cold reserve, their adventurousness knows no bounds."
There was a fragment of disappointment registering in his mind at Greg's refusal to show the slightest execration.
"I'm afraid I can't stop long, Mr. de Girolamo,"
Greg said.
My friends would worry about what had happened to me.
No, Kendrick said. His thoughts were steely.
I'm sorry? No.
You're not staying at all, Mandel. Katerina let you on board. My mistake. You should not have been allowed within 1,000,000 kilometers of the Miriam.
But I was wondering if you could help me.
I inquired about you after our first encounter. I know what you are. A gland psychic. A mind star veteran. You are not going to ask me anything. You are going to uncover. Event Horizon's Truthfinder General, sent to pry by your whore daughter mistress. Greg held his dismay in check.
Any answers you give would be entirely voluntary. I can't read people's thoughts.
So you claim. And other people fervently hope. It is a particular human weakness you pry on, Mandel. We want, need to believe we are secure against you. But I have a vast repository of confidential commercial information in my brain. I choose not to believe the word of a repulsive grotesquerie, a fair laboratory experiment.
Greg let the neurohormones discharge into his brain, desperately searching round with his intuition. There was guilt here, a strong scent. Kendrick and Julia were tied together, hating each other, feeding off each other. With a shock, he knew she was as guilty as Kendrick. Both of them willfully stimulating the other's black obsession, a perverted symbiosis. He was jerked out of his meditative analysis by hands like a pair of vices, clamping round his upper arms. The bodyguards were standing on either side of him.
Mark, Toby.
Throw him off, Kendrick said.
I'm going,
Greg told them. He sensed rather than saw Mark's smirk.
Too right, the bodyguard said.
Greg contracted his espersense. Neglected the other minds arrayed around the Miriam, focusing on Kendrick alone.
Wolf!
He shouted. There was no reaction. No guilt, fright, consternation, panic. The name hadn't registered. Instead, a band of mild puzzlement tapered through Kendrick's mind. It was followed by a rising tide of wry satisfaction when he realized how shaken Greg was by the negative. Toby and Mark frog-marched him off the aft deck and down the side of the superstructure, Kendrick's laughter chasing him all the way. He was dropped abruptly at the top of the gangplank, stumbling. Something with the force of a runaway train slammed into his backside. He tried to curl up into the trusty old paratroop landing crouch, but it didn't seem to work very well. He saw a fast, confusing snapshot sequence of yachts and water and sky at impossible angles, each black interstice punctuated by a new burst of pain that mercifully shut off almost as soon as it registered, leaving a patch of numbness. The BioWare node spliced into his cortex, which regulated his gland, was also programmed to blank out nervous impulses above a predetermined pain level. Mindstar had included the limiter as an experiment to try and alleviate shock in combat injury cases. But the army had never brought it into widespread use. There was too much danger of squaddies ignoring the damage they'd received and making it worse. The unyielding concrete of the key arrested his helter-skelter momentum with a sickeningly loud slap. His brain seemed to be floating at the center of a closed, insensate universe. There was harsh laughter from afar, followed by running feet. Hands grasped him, hauling him upright.
Shit, you okay? Can you walk?
Tactile sensation eased back. The cortical node reopening enough nerve channels for him to regain control over his limbs. Bruises throbbed sharply across his legs, arms, and back. His left leg was shaking. Both hands smarted from wide slashes of grazed skin, filming over with blood. Tunnel vision showed his suede desert boots at some vast distance. He couldn't breathe through his nose. It was full of warm, sticky liquid.
Come on, lean on us!
That was Susie. Greg did so, gratefully.
You want those pillocks taken out?
There was a note of hope coloring her voice.
No.
He shook his head. Big mistake. The world reeled alarmingly. Acid bile rose, scouring his throat.
Green South, stand down. We're bringing Thunderchild in. Gold West, cover please.
There was a small Cambridge blue three-wheel sweeper float ahead of him now, its front roller brushes retracted, inclined at 45 degrees, looking like rusty felt mandibles. The name Gus's Sanitizing was written down the side in bold yellow letters. Greg was urged onto the narrow seat in the Perspex bubble cab, and Dez climbed in behind the wheel, while Susie rode shotgun on the footplate. The two Trinities were both wearing jaunty red shirts and matching trousers, complemented with Gus's company caps, burger bar uniforms. Dez swooped the float into a hard turn and set off back down the quay at a good 5 kilometers per hour, squirting a thick spray of bubbly detergent in their wake. He fumbled with the dash switches and cut the rain of cleanliness, cursing hotly.
"I've got to go back," Greg said, pinching his nose between thumb and forefinger.
"Fuck that," Dez said. "We've blown cover hauling you out. I've got to get my squad safeguarded. Standard procedure. You should know that, Mr. Military Hotshot. This operation is now over." "What the hell do you want to go back for?" Susie asked.
"I have to see something."
They shot out onto the promenade, and Dez tilted the joystick sharp left. Pedestrians hopped out of the way, hurling abuse.
"Listen," Dez said. "You want to go back, that's fucking fine by me. I'll stop right now, and you can walk. But you're on your own. We've been burning our asses off for you, and I don't see anything to show for it."
"Okay, drop me here."
"Shit!"
Susie and Dez exchanged anxious, befuddled glances.
"You can't," said Susie. "Come on, Greg, you can't hardly walk. We'll bring you back in a couple of days, when it's cooler."
"It has to be now."
"The photon amps are still in place. How about we take you back to Angelica's? You can watch from there."
Greg probed his nose tenderly. It didn't feel broken, and it had stopped bleeding.
"Not that sort of watching. Not visual. I want to use my Esper sense on them."
"Jesus!" Dez spat. "You Mind Star?"
"Yeah."
"Bloody hell," Susie muttered. "I knew there was something about you. Father never said nout."
Greg said nothing. He had always held back from mentioning it to the Trinities. People developed funny attitudes to psychics, kids especially. Let them just think he was lucky. Outfits like that put a lot in superstition.
"Jesus," Dez said. "Fucking Mind Star, active in Peterborough. Think on it. Party always pissed itself over you people. Look, just what is going down on that yacht?"
"If I knew for sure, I wouldn't have to go back."
"Shit. Just how close do you have to get?"
They compromised. Dez drove into the maze of service alleys behind the promenade shops and swapped clothes with Greg. Then he went off to organize the squad's withdrawal, leaving Susie to drive Greg. There'd be no more retrieval posses if Toby and Mike came after them, but the snipers would remain in place until Greg had finished. Susie drove back out onto the promenade and deployed the brushes before moving up the quay next to the Miriam's mooring. Seagull crap dissolved into creamy puddles, frizzy bristles whisking it away into the float's tanks.
"Stop here," Greg's told her once they were opposite Kendricks's yacht.
She climbed out of the little cab.
"Don't be too long," she implored,
and lifted the engine cowling. Greg relaxed, sinking back into the thin cushioning of the bench, and instructed the cortical node to shut out the sharp throbs of pain his nerves were reporting loyally. The gland, stressed, taut like a marathon runner's calf on the home straight. A sluice of neurohormones bubbled out amongst his axons. He wanted a sensory extension that went way beyond his usual short-range emotion perception. To find it, he retreated inwards, ignoring his blood heat, heartbeats, breathing. The state waited for him right down at the bottom of the mental well, a fragile central pool. Gaseous shapes meandered below its surface. He slipped softly below the interface. Greg perceived shadows. Treacherous grey cobwebs congealing into misleading forms, aching empty gaps of grainy mist. The vision was silent, neither hot nor cold. Through it all, minds shone like diamond point mirages, a flat cyclonic swirl of fireflies, with himself at the tranquil storm eye. He concentrated, seeking the opaque distortion of Miriam, the familiar signature of one mind. The water resolved as a sheet of black ice, a dead zone. He drifted across it, stretching out close to his absolute limit. Miriam's hull rose above him, a cliff of insubstantial gauze, passing through. The three figures were cloudy alien protrusions into his lonely universe, their shape fuzzy, a pseudo-locus rippling around a solid kernel. Kendrick and Hermione slid fluidly over and round Katerina, the three together a tightly knit serpentine coil. Katerina was a soul in torment, hating herself for what she was doing, unable to refuse. She closed out the degradations Hermione performed, warm with the conviction her reward would come. Greg observed her arousal growing as Kendrick pleasured himself with her, his mind leaking distorted pictures of Julia. Fissures of intense rapture multiplied through her mind, interlacing, spreading to conquer, reducing her to animal abandon. Orgasm brought a blazing concussion of frenzied ecstasy, a neural nova. Instinct and dusty memory fused within Greg's tarnished cranium, and at last he knew what Kendrick had done to her. The intangible universe twisted, spectral images elongating and spiraling down to a tightly wound vanishing point. The marina's sights and sounds boiled up around him, solid and loud.
"Let's go home," he said weakly.
Sustaining such a vast sigh of fusion was severely debilitating. Gravity seemed to have quadrupled.
"About time," Susie grumbled,
slamming down the cowling and locking the catches with a vicious twist.
"You look like shit, you know."
"Thank you."
The sky overhead was jaundiced, its turbidity fluctuating in time to his heartbeat.
"That gland must really take it out of you."
Her foot pressed down on the accelerator pad.
"It does."
"Thought so. You were thrashing about like you were having a nightmare. Get what you want?"
"Yes."
"Hey, your nose has started bleeding again."
"It'll stop in a minute."